Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Jordan is on best. Harper's on Miller.
Play together, they believe. And Karis LeVert is cold.
LeVert back in. Fade. Oh, he's a one-man wrecking crew.
Holiday. Shot clock down to six. Finds Warren.
Welcome to another edition of the Indy Cornrows Podcast. This is your host, Mark Schindler. As always, before we get started, if you haven't already, please be sure to rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts. I always want to hear from you and get your feedback. Let me know what you like, dislike, anything you think could improve. I mean, I do this for you guys, so I would love to hear from you. And of course, hit me up on Twitter with any questions, comments, thoughts, anything. I have a running mailbag that I'm doing every Wednesday, so I'm always looking for questions or things that you guys are thinking about. I can hit up on there. So today, it's another episode of Pacers After Dark. Just kidding, it's Pacers After Sunrise. I'm recording this on Saturday morning. I just went through and rewatched the game. I clipped some stuff on Twitter as well. Obviously, all right, so I mean, just to start in, Pacers lost to the Boston Celtics last night at the TD Garden in Boston. They are now 15-16 and in the eighth seed. They might be tied. I'm not entirely sure, but regardless, dropped four seeds after last night. A lot to unpack from this game, but also a lot of the same stuff that we've been seeing. We're kind of seeing a trend now. The Pacers' defense has, I don't want to say turned a corner, because it's still not quite where I think it needs to be or could be, but it's been better over the last 2 weeks. But then the offense is still really just struggling. Last night, the offense really struggled down the stretch. The defense was able to get a pretty solid amount of stops. We'll get into that more. But the offense continues to be a problem in terms of what they're able to do late game. And also, I mean, right out the gates, the team put up 18 points in the first 5 minutes, was looking really good. They had an 18-4 lead at one point. The Celtics take an initial timeout. They make some adjustments. Mainly, they stop doubling Domas in the post, and they start cheating onto him instead to make it harder for him to pass out and attack double teams. And that really changed the flow of things. Guys stopped moving as much off ball. There wasn't as much action going on off ball, which I think part of that you can look at and say that it's because of the just because of how the team has gone lately. That's been a staple, unfortunately, like in a negative way, that the ball movement has really died down and the off-ball movement has really died down. I'm not entirely sure what to make of that. And yeah, just to point out that in the last 2 weeks, the Pacers are they have a 110.7 offensive rating and a 111 defensive rating. So that's 19th and 11th in the league, respectively. Defense solid. Offense, not so much. So I think the first thing that I really want to talk about is Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm really struggled from the field last night. I believe he finished 5 of 17, 2 of 7 from 3, not getting to the free throw line at all. But I think part of this is he guarded Jason Tatum the entire night. Jason Tatum was the best player on the floor yesterday, and Malcolm was tasked with defending him most of the time he was out there. He only played 33 minutes, which is low for him. But, I mean, Tatum finished 4 of 18 from the floor, also did not get to the free throw line. Him and Brogdon both just had similarly disappointing offensive games, but I think part of it is just Malcolm's spending so much time and energy defending the top primary option on the other team, and considering he's doing it almost the entire time he's on the court, it makes sense. But he also missed a couple of really, you know, easy looks for him that we're used to seeing him knock down. He missed some wide open threes off the catch. He wasn't finishing well at the rim. And also, too, the Celtics were continuing to... They were going over screens on him at the beginning of the game. They started going under and mixing it up a little bit, and that continues to be a problem for him, which we'll talk about in the second portion of this podcast. I have a really great guest for the second part that you will enjoy, who's much smarter than I am on this stuff, has a lot of really great insight on what they're doing. But yes, Malcolm continues to just not play well in the month of February. Right now, in 11 games, Malcolm's shooting 41% from the floor, 33% from three. All of his raw numbers are down. He's turning the ball over more. He's assisting on less. And part of that's just because the team is not shooting well. They're shooting 46% from the field in February, which is not good. That puts him in the bottom 10 of the league, I believe. A lot of that, I was talking about this with someone on Twitter yesterday. I really think a lot of it just comes down to not having somebody who can take some of the pressure off Malcolm. Not to say that Malcolm can't handle it, but more he's being tasked with driving so much of the offense during the game that he just doesn't have the juice to do it for an entire 33 to 38 minutes, however long he's out there playing. And he really misses having the gravity of someone like Vic out there, who can, even if he's not, you know, an all-star level player, somebody who can draw the defense. Because right now, I mean, you look at the starting lineup, Domas obviously can. Miles is not. He can do stuff off the catch. He can do some things as an individual, and he's been really, really pleasant this year. We'll talk about his game in a minute. But Justin Holiday, as good of a catch-and-shooter as he is, and he can do some stuff off the dribble too, he's not somebody you're really worried about driving and kicking. He can drive and kick, but again, he's not really like a huge threat in his creating his own offense, going to the rim. Jeremy Lamb is not really in that place either, even though he can do some stuff with the ball in his hands. There just isn't somebody else who can take some of what Malcolm is doing and get Malcolm the opportunity to run off ball, because that's what we saw a lot of at the beginning of the year. I think that's part of why the ball movement was better. Part of why the off-ball movement was better, because you were able to get open looks for somebody who is a fantastic off-ball player. And the Pacers have quite a few guys who are good off-ball players, but it's just easier when Malcolm's not having to run so much, is the point. That two-man game with Malcolm and Domas really struggled down the stretch. Domas only took 12 shots all game. He got to the free throw line a bunch, though. And even more importantly, the Doug McDermott-Domas two-man game has looked kind of just off the last week. Doug finished 2 of 9 from the field, 2 of 7 from three. He had a cut to the rim that was really nice. Solid lob from Domas, and Doug just couldn't finish it. It ends up hitting the underneath part of the rim. They just weren't really together yesterday. Doug only played 23 minutes, which is, again, low for him. He's struggled in February as well. He's averaging 13 points per game, but he's shooting 31.8% from three over the last 10 games, which is very un-Doug-like, but that's been kind of his year. He just really has not shot well from three. He's getting to the rim and finishing well there, but in terms of what he's doing as a shooter, just the shots that we expect from him to fall after last year are not falling. But then conversely, Justin Holiday is hitting everything. Like, the corners are just made for Justin Holiday, apparently. He cannot miss from three. He's shooting 46%. From three in February. He's been fantastic, but they're really missing Doug being able to do that too. They're not commanding the same off-ball gravity that I really think that they did last year from Doug, and that's hurt them for sure. I mean, teams are still, of course, tracking him off-ball, but it's not it just in watching, it doesn't feel nearly the same as it did last year. The next player I really want to hit on is Jeremy Lamb. Jeremy had a really, really, really rough game last night. Defensively is kind of expected how he's been so far this year. He had a couple of nice plays off ball where he was able to get his hands on a ball or interrupt the passing lane, muck things up. And that was nice, but he continues to get absolutely torched in zone. I believe there were 4 or 5 straight possessions where the Pacers tried to run a 2-3, and I don't like pinning things on one player, but Jeremy was just a major reason for why the zone has been so bad. He's not communicating well, and part of it can go on teammates. You know, again, I'm not on the floor. I can't make those calls. But just the communication does not appear to be there. He's letting guys cut behind him easily, sometimes passing his guy off. Like, You let Peyton Pritchard get a rebound off of him, an offensive rebound off him. Peyton Pritchard's like barely my height. Just kidding. I mean, he's 5'11 or 6 foot, so he's taller than me, but you get the point. And I mean, the defense just rough. He can't keep anybody in front of him right now. And the offense wasn't going for him yesterday. When Jeremy's offense is not efficient, or he's not able to really create for himself, or he's not normally creating for anyone else, at least not at a super high level. But I mean, Jeremy was 2 of 7 from the field yesterday. Edmund Sumner almost plays more minutes than him, and plays more minutes than him down the stretch, which was deserved. I mean, Jeremy just when he was driving, he had to pick up his dribble a lot. He was struggling to get to the rim, which he's normally not getting to the rim a ton, but in terms of getting a small advantage and being able to create space for himself, he wasn't able to do that yesterday. So just overall, I think that was probably Jeremy's worst game of the year, which is, I mean, it's still a good sign because the Pacers were in this game most of the game, and Jeremy just didn't have it. Edmund Sumner, I am at the point, I tweeted this yesterday, I don't know if he is not a consistent part of the rotation moving forward. I just don't have an answer for why. I don't think there's a legitimate justification for him to not be. Single game plus minus again, noisy, but he was one of three players to finish with a positive plus minus yesterday. I was a +2. You could just see in the way that he played how impactful he was. He had 2 steals. His 1 assist was for an awesome Justin Holiday corner three because Ed dove out of bounds to get a rebound, ran in transition, got the ball back, drove to the rim, and passed out to Justin. It was a breathtaking sequence, one of the best sequences of last night. You just see what Ed can do energy-wise, defensively. I mean, Caitlin pointed this out on Twitter, too. I am not sure what the Pacers were doing defensively with Ed out there. At times, it looked like it was a box and one. At other times, it looked like it was zone. At other times, I wasn't sure. I don't know if that was on Ed. I don't know if that was on the coaching staff. I don't know if that was supposed to be happening. So that was interesting, but I thought his defense was pretty solid. He was deflecting a bunch. I pointed out as well, he was doing some nice stuff off ball in terms of just getting his hands in and trying to get the ball, which that sounds rudimentary, but like that article I pointed out with Miles, just that activity and having hands constantly coming from everywhere, that makes it you have to think more as an offensive player if the opposing team is doing that. I thought that was important. I really liked what he was doing. So again, yes, I have no idea how he cannot get more time. He ended up getting to the free throw line 3 times, 5 attempts, but I think 1 was an and 1, then 2 were just other times that he got there. But that was fantastic. He only goes 1 of 4 from the field, finishes with 6 points. But again, he just provides some of the stuff that this team is missing. He's super athletic. He gives you a threat in transition. He can handle the ball. I don't think he's ever going to get the opportunity to run any kind of sets or anything, and that's fine that they determine that. But I just think he has to be playing from here on out. I don't know how you cannot play him after how he played last night. And that goes to another bench player who played really well last night. That was Aaron Holiday. He was just on last night. He had a very traditional Aaron Holiday stat line, and it's a little reductive, but 15 points, 2 steals, and nothing else. And he was in more of a play finisher role last night. He was good. He was handling the ball. He was running some stuff. He had just a couple of ridiculous finishes. One, like, he dribbled through a double team, split the double, bobbled the ball, almost lost it, almost gets stolen. Somebody darts for it. He picks it up. He hits a floater out of nowhere and saves the possession. And Aaron was just capable of doing that last night. He was efficient from the field, 6 of 12. Was pretty solid from deep, 3 of 7. He's been better of late. He's still not been awesome inside the arc, but he's found a shot from 3 lately. I would like to see the passing be a little bit better, but again, that wasn't really what he was asked to do last night. He was doing a lot in terms of just getting balls at the end of possessions and trying to score off them. He did pretty well. Like, I was pleased with his game. I thought he was solid defensively too. Kemba Walker, who I'm going to talk about in a minute, I thought he was solid on Kemba. He did pretty well on Peyton Pritchard. Jeff Teague was largely playing when they played zone, so that's why Jeff Teague played actually pretty well last night. He played way better than he should have. Not to be rude, but I think Jeff Teague should not be scoring 14 points on good efficiency. He shouldn't be getting to the line 8 times. And a lot of that was the zone. I pointed out a play when they were running that five-man unit with Jeremy at the four, and they kept going back to zone with that. And it was just they got eviscerated when they were running Jeremy at the four in zone, or Jeremy in zone at all was rough. And there was one play where Jeff Teague comes down. Or I think it was Peyton Pritchard who came down with the ball, and Aaron was on Peyton. Jeremy, I can't remember who Jeremy was on right now, but then Jeff Teague came down and he was wide open. So Aaron comes over to pick up Jeff Teague after Peyton Pritchard passes the ball. But then Jeremy rotates over too, and then Jeff Teague pass fakes, and both guys go back to Peyton Pritchard. Jeff Teague goes for a wide open floater, and I believe he gets fouled too on that. Like that's one of the things. Like the zone communication has been so poor. I don't understand the intricacies of zone defense as well as some. I'm sure Caitlin has much better opinions on this, and she always will put it out on Twitter, so of course follow her and all the stuff she's saying. But I think you just look at the zone, and so often it's a communication breakdown. It's not necessarily because one player isn't, I mean, not because like the other team is completely picking them apart. They're getting picked apart because they're not communicating. Like there was a Tice to Robert Williams high low that happened because Robert Williams just came inside and Jeremy passed them off. And again, I'm not trying to just pinpoint directly at Jeremy. Part of it could be, I mean, there has to be communication from the back line so that people know what's going on. Miles doesn't even see, at least from the clip, it does not appear like he even sees that Robert Williams sinks into the dunker spot. So he steps up on Tice. Tice passes it easily to Robert Williams. Jeremy is not able to make a play because Rob's got a ton of size on him. And it's just super easy points. And that it felt like that happened on like 70% of the zone possessions yesterday. I think Caitlin tweeted out, I believe that the Pacers got scored on I think it was 5 of 9 zone possessions. It might have been slightly more. I think that might have been tweeted out in the third or fourth quarter. I can't remember. But regardless, the zone continues to be a little bit confusing. I get wanting to mix in new things, throw different looks, but it was just a lot of head scratching and just kind of deep sighs in watching the zone defense play. But alas, now I want to talk about TJ McConnell. TJ had an uncharacteristically poor game on defense yesterday. He ended up a team low -16. And again, it's just single game plus minus is what it is. But I think a lot of that was he was trying to guard Kemba Walker, and Kemba was so good yesterday. Justin had to guard Kemba too. Both guys really struggled on Kemba, and I think that's more of the way that Boston was playing. It was interesting because normally the Pacers were playing more center field and not doing strictly drop. It felt like they really wanted to give that 16 to 20 footer to the Celtics, and to their credit, they were decent from there. They finished 9 of 22, which is like around 40%. But Kemba was 3 of 4 on those long-range pull-up mid-rangers. He got to, I mean, he was good from short mid. He didn't do too much damage at the rim, but he was taking pull-up threes and hitting them. When you play more of a stricter drop, or not even a strict drop, but they were just dropping enough where they weren't at the level of the screen, and they were conceding that to Kemba, but he had probably his best game of the season yesterday. I mean, his efficiency was great, 10 of 19, 4 of 10 from 3. He got to the free throw line multiple times. He was just killing the Pacers. I mean, as well as they guarded Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I mean, they went a combined 9 of 30, only got to the line 6 times together. They were 1 of 6 from 3. I really thought they played a good game on Brown and Tatum, and we're doing some good things of denying the ball to them. But I just don't think that they really had anything in terms of trying to guard Kemba or stop Kemba. And a lot of that came down to TJ McConnell. Again, like he's normally so good at defending these smaller guards, but Kemba just had it yesterday. I think TJ was fine offensively. But again, the way like the – it was tough because with how little the ball is moving offensively, like I could – I'll have to take a screenshot of this and put it up on Twitter, but – there was a play where Domas is inside where he's in the post, and the Celtics have all five of their defenders have a foot in the paint. And that is like so telling of what this offense is right now. Like, because there's no movement going on, they're not able to really get anything going on off ball. Like, I think some people are looking at Domas and saying that he's ball hogging or something like that. And I totally disagree. There's just like I mentioned with the Celtics, like they weren't really doubling him. And a lot of the offensive scheme is once Domas gets doubled, that's when he passes out, because that's how you create an advantage. You get an open shooter or open driver because somebody has to help out onto Domas. And Domas he's a good post-up player, but he derives a lot of his efficiency and ability comes out of being able to pass out of the doubles. And he was good getting fouled, getting to the rim. I thought he probably played the best or second best game of any of the Pacers yesterday. It's him or Miles. They both actually played pretty well in some regards. We'll talk more about Miles in a minute, but I think it's just without any kind of movement going on. And again, that's reductive. Like, there's some stuff going on, but there was a play too where it felt like they were waiting for the double to happen to set off ball movement up. Like, I put this play up. It was one of the first things in the thread. It was after they had started to cheat onto Domas instead of straight doubling him. And you can see Malcolm getting ready to move, but he's waiting for the double. You can see Miles getting ready to screen for Malcolm, but he's waiting for the double and it never comes. So then nothing is set up off ball. I think they have to really look to try and do something differently with that, because that has been that's just been so apparent over these last 11 games in February. And again, that's rudimentary stuff, but it stands out in rewatching. Just the ball movement is not there. The off-ball movement is not there that we saw at the beginning. And that's something nice that Edmund Sumner brought. I think we're seeing a lot more just overall motion from the bench, it feels like. And part of that is maybe because they only have one big out there. But again, that's more minutia that I'll have to dive into more. I'm interested to talk to Caitlin about it, and we'll see kind of what we come up to with that. I know she'll have a lot of great insight on that as well. So next thing I want to talk about, though, the Pacers were 16 of 35 in the paint yesterday, which is, believe it or not, not good. They just, like we're mentioning, they could not finish inside. I think Domas was good, but everyone else was missing bunnies yesterday, which I don't really understand what that does. Any if somebody understands the bunny saying, please hit me up, because I don't get it. Like, what is a bunny? Like, I get it. Like, okay, a bunny is like missing something easy at the rim, but how is that a bunny? Like, what? Why did we decide to call it a bunny? I don't know. Hopefully you enjoy the inner monologue of me, because that's where I'm at with it. I have no idea what to consider it, why it's called a bunny, but it is what it is. Again, I can't fault Domas for anything offensively yesterday. Miles had a tremendous start to the game. I mean, I think he had 13 points in the first quarter, finishes with 17 points for the game. Part of the issue, he goes 2 of 8 from 3. He has not shot well from 3 over the last month. Again, in February, shooting 29% from 3. I think that'll rise back up, but he's not been great shooting from 3 at all this year. I mean, he's been below average, below his average. I think that'll come back up, but I'm hopeful that it'll kind of regress to the mean in a positive way. So maybe he shoots 37% for the next month, because he really needs that to get him going. I like that he's been taking the looks that he's been getting. I don't think he's been hesitant on many looks. He's been so much better with that this year. But at the same time, I really just think that there has to be some way to get him better looks. And part of that is the corners. This team is currently 26th in corner three-point attempts. And I would really like to see them try and paint the corners more, because I think there's an opportunity there that they could really take in getting some easier looks. Like, Miles is, I think he's, I mean, it's, again, rudimentary to say, most guys are better shooters from the corner. It's the easier three-point shot. But I think if there's a way to get more action going on the sides instead of having so much come from above the break, I think if they could really utilize the wings and try and get Miles and even Domas more looks from the corners, because a lot of Domas's attempts are from above the break. I just think both guys, if you get them going from the corners, that seems like a good idea to me, just considering how little is actually coming from there for them. Like, I mean, overall, Domas has taken 7 corner threes this year. Miles has taken 29 corner threes compared to 129 total shots from three. Like, and Miles has one of the highest corner attempt rates on the team, other than Justin. Justin takes 28% of his shots are from the corner. And the next closest is Doug at 10%. Like, that's obviously a big part, big facet of Justin's game. But again, just a small thing that I think they could really try and work on, because Miles is a good corner shooter. That's where he started. I mean, shooting 34% from the corner, it's not anything ridiculous, but that's better than shooting 31% above the break. So I would like to see that. Again, I would like to see Domas get more of those. They look more comfortable doing it. And also, I think it would help to try and get some more side actions instead of running everything above the break. Like I mentioned earlier, like, you just throw in some diversity, because it feels like a lot is just coming in that high pick and roll or running stagger screens. Would just like to see that change up. I think as far as the game goes overall, and where this team is at, I think, you know, a lot of stuff keeps getting thrown around about where the Pacers are right now and people complaining, and I get it. I mean, this team is sub 500, 31 games in the season for what feels like probably the first time since the 14-15 season, when Paul George missed the whole year until like the last 8 games, I think. So it's a rough stretch. But again, like, I talk about this in the pod later on, and for, in case you haven't checked out the pod notes, this is with this podcast is with Steve Jones Jr. Great dude. Really appreciate him taking the time. Former coach and video coordinator, runs the Dunker Spot with a friend of mine, Nikias Duncan. And not just a thing, a friend of mine. I mean, Nikias is one of the best writers, analysts out there. He's fantastic. If you don't follow his work, please do. I learned so much from him. But, you know, we talk about this later on. Just not having that extra gravity, not having Karis, not having TJ. Of course, that's not everything, but it is a lot, especially offensively. I do think that they could be working to get better shots, but so much of it just comes down to asking a lot out of a little right now, with asking Malcolm and Domas to carry so much of the offensive load in a way that I don't think they're equipped to, frankly. And that's not to be unfair. I think that's just being realistic. Like, asking those two guys to be your entire offense is a lot, especially when you don't have the same kind of ability to do things off the ball, like we've talked about most of this podcast. You know, like, that's when you're passing out to Justin Holiday instead of to Caris LeVert, somebody who can, like, because just think of it in terms of this. If you pass out to Justin, the defense has to think, okay, Justin is a really great shooter. We have to close out to him. But at the same time, I'm not super worried about Justin driving and making something happen at the rim or from mid-range. And I don't think he's going to make a great read if we close out hard on him and he has to pass off from there. So there's that. But, like, if you look at Karis is a real threat to drive to the rim or to pull up from mid-range or to take that three, even though he's not a great catch-and-shoot guy. He can maybe do, like, a one-dribble pull-up. He's great at those. Point being, just there's not a lot of dynamics to the offense. There's a lot of one- or two-dimensional players alongside Malcolm and Domas, and that's not to slight them. That's just the nature of where the team is at right now. I do think that they should be a little bit better than where they're at. We've talked about that on past pods. But at the same time, I don't think you should be expecting too much more than this team to be right around 500, just how they currently are. I hope that changes in the coming weeks, especially, I mean, the next stretch of games. Like we talked about, Tom and I talked about this on the last pod. This to close out this half of the season is very important for them. I'm not really entirely sure that they're going to. I'm pretty positive they're not going to be 500 by the All-Star break. I hope I'm pleasantly surprised, but it seems pretty unlikely to me. So we will see what happens there. But overall, you know, on to the Knicks tonight. The Pacers play the Knicks at MSG tonight. It'll be a tough game. It's a 1-1 series right now. The Knicks are now ahead of the Pacers in the standings, which I can't remember the last time we could say that. So that's different. This will be a huge game for keeping things going and trying to find a positive groove headed into the All-Star break, because this team really needs it. So without further ado, we're going to take a quick break. And then when I come back, you will hear from Steve Jones Jr. and myself.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome to another edition of the Indie Cornrows Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Schindler. As always, before we get started today, if you haven't already, please be sure to rate and review us. Over on Apple Podcasts, always helps us out. I want to get your feedback, let you know, let me know what you think. Always want to hear from you. Really psyched to be joined today by Steve Jones Jr. If you don't already know him, you should, first of all. One of the OG Twitter guys OG film guys on Twitter. I can't speak today, apparently. My dog's been running me out. Steve, I got to ask you before we get started. Were you a boxing fan growing up? This is going somewhere, I promise.
Kind of. I mean, I liked Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield, and I think I got into like the George Foreman comeback run when I was little.
Okay. All right. So I boxed for a while growing up. I actually like really wanted to go pro with it, but Roy Jones was like my idol. So anytime I see your name pop up on Twitter, I hear Steve Jones Jr., but like the way that Roy got announced coming out to fights. So interesting tidbit that I wanted to lead off with.
No, I'll take it.
I mean, right, man. Like, come on. He's the prime example of somebody who should have stopped a little bit earlier. That always makes me a little sad thinking about it. But we're here to talk about defense, man. I'm really excited to pick your brain on what you think about where the Pacers are at defensively right now, because I have a lot of thoughts on it, but you're, you know, a million times smarter than I am in looking at some of this stuff. But I think the first thing that I want to ask you is, where do you, when you look at this Pacers team, how do you feel about them? Like, just your general impression on where they're at this year with the new coaching staff.
Well, I've gone up and down with the Pacers. I felt like in the start of the season, they had beaten my expectations. They had fixed a lot of the things that I had thought maybe they need to check off to get to the next level. The pace was better. The tempo was better. The execution was better. They were getting into actions quicker. They were putting more pressure on defenses. They were able to get good minutes out of Sabonis and Turner together. Brogdon was taking a step. Oladipo, when he was here, was taking a step. So things were moving in the right direction. You know, I kind of have check boxes for teams early in the season. So they were checking a lot of the things off. The success came with, you know, obviously they've had injury struggles, and now teams are a little bit more prepared. There's more film for them. They're ready for it. So now it's on them to make that adjustment. And you see more issues right now as far as things are bogging down in the half court. Defensively, things are up and down. So it's kind of how they respond to that. So I'm not necessarily out on the Pacers, but it's just going to be interesting to see how they adjust to the league getting used to what they're doing now.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. I think I would agree with that. Like, I mean, you can just look at the Oladipo trade as a great kind of gauge of where this team is at. They were 8-4 before they traded him. They got a little bit of hype in national media. And then obviously when you – luckily things worked out the way they did in terms of the trade for Karis. But just looking at it strictly in a roster standpoint, you trade a guy who was playing at a sub-all-star level with the Pacers for – you know, upgrading somebody into your rotation and not really having anybody to fill that void. So that's obviously a massive dip. And my dog's very vocal about it too.
He didn't like the trade. Dude,
hey man, it should have been 4 walks instead of 3 before I got out, but apparently. But yeah, I mean, so you look at that and I like, how much would you attribute that to impacting the half, or not? I mean, of course it impacts the half court offense, but just from my eyes, it's felt like a lot of the ball, like the off ball movement has died down a little bit. And in general, it's just, I mean, Malcolm and Domas have gone down in efficiency without having that extra gravity by them. But do you think there's kind of more to that than just Vic being out, or what have your thoughts been on that as well?
Well, I think it hurts because at a base level, Oladipo was a big threat. that mm-hmm. teams were going to be concerned about. He was a different outlet. So you can run a pick and roll with Malcolm. If it doesn't work, you can run another action with Oladipo. So it's kind of a yin yang effect where they could play off each other. Obviously, you hope Caris LeVert is all right overall health wise. That's the most important thing. I thought he'd slide right in, but you didn't get him. So right now, you lose what you had with him, and there's no real replacement for it. You know, McDermott, Holiday, solid players can give you spacing. They don't have the same gravity in actions. You know, teams aren't going to withhold them in the same way. So it's tough to recreate it, and it puts more pressure on the Brogdon-Sabonis two-man game. And by putting more pressure on that two-man game, defenses are able to lock in on it a little bit more than they were before, so you're not opening the same things up. So it's just it's a tough thing to evaluate because I don't think it's the end of the world for the Pacers. They obviously have some guys missing, but with the current unit, it's clear what they have to do and who's going to create it. And teams are kind of locking in on that. And that makes it tough.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we saw that even in the last game against Golden State, they were really sticking the two man game and they were comfortable leaving other guys open or cheating off them a little bit. And especially too, you've mentioned this on Twitter. Caitlin's mentioned it on Twitter a ton too. Just going under the Brogdon screen has really given them fits. And we keep seeing that routinely. But in looking at the Pacers defense, because this is what I really want to boil down, because I think the offense has been just so much better compared to last year, at least more dynamic. They're adding in new things. There are a lot more wrinkles. Looking at the defense, at the beginning of the year, I felt a little bit differently about it. But as, you know, like, I mean, as we're mentioning, with Vic leaving, and the way that things have changed up, the Pacers are now, I'm pulling up right now, I believe they're 14th in defense. It's either 13th or 14th in defense. I can't get the numbers right, of course. But I believe they were sixth last year. And they've been, of course, they were really good under Nate McMillan the entire Dan Burke era. So the entire time I've been alive, pretty much, the Pacers have been like a top 10 defense, as long as you just pretend the Troy Murphy years didn't happen, because that's what I do. So you go from playing a very conservative scheme all around, mostly putting your guy on an island, to now very heavy ball pressure, a lot more trapping than I'd ever seen with the Pacers. Before I put any judgment on it, what are your thoughts on how the defenses look so far and the way it's changed up?
Well, it's a mixed bag. They've obviously tried to be way more active, pressuring the ball, off the ball, getting into bodies, denying, and pick and roll, not just being at the level, but trapping. And that puts a lot of pressure on your defense. You know, if you're going to have your big at the level, you have to have help behind it. And part of the issue is sometimes it's a mix, really. What I'd say is sometimes there's a struggle at what I call the first level. So when the guard's coming off the screen, the trap isn't all the way there, he turns the corner. Obviously, that's a problem. But, you know, if they hit the roller, now the help isn't quite there. And now you're even giving up a skip or a layup or those kind of things. And you never want to have both of those issues. You know, one of those issues you can probably deal with, you can probably fix, you can handle. But when you're not sure which one it's going to be, it makes it tough. So it's hard. I love being at the level. I love being aggressive. But it's one of those things where if you do it all the time, you're handing an advantage to the offense. You know, they know what you're going to do. You're going to be up there. I'm going to hit the roller. Now you got to play out of it. So it puts pressure on your recovery, your rotations, and the help defense hasn't necessarily been where it should be for it to work. The rotations haven't been as consistent as I'd like to see it. So it's kind of a yin yang effect. Yes, you're trying to take away X, but you're also giving up Y and Z in exchange.
Yeah. I felt really similarly. Like even again, just mentioning the Golden State game, they played really good defense. And well, I mean, they played really good defense the entire game, but as you saw, like throughout especially the second half, they started cutting from the wings a lot more, getting open stuff off the first action. And that's been the big problem. Like you're mentioning, like stopping at the first level, they're not getting stops at the first level. Like it reminds me of like almost playing like a tower defense game when I was a kid. Like if you get totally screwed up at the first point, then you're just getting hit farther and farther back. Like they can't contain anybody at the point of attack right now, which has been such a major problem. I don't know. I mean, I think just having Caris and the fact that he's a bigger dude with wingspan and some athleticism, like that helps and makes a difference. Same thing with having TJ Warren back eventually, if that happens this year, which I am not sure of yet. But regardless, like they cannot keep anyone in front of them.
Well, it's tough. It's tough. And again, like it's not just always on pick and roll. Sometimes they get beat off the dribble. And now that forces help. So it's just kind of it's a tough deal when you can't contain at the point of attack. It just puts so much pressure on your defense overall. So it'll be interesting to see how they make the adjustment, you know, because they can be softer with Miles. And if you see it at times, him being a drop, but overall they want to be more aggressive and active. So it's kind of maybe finding that middle ground, maybe using it as personnel, you know, not just as a straight scheme every time. It'll be interesting to see how they grow.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because that's one of the things that's been, I guess frustrating. Like, I don't come at it as like a fan perspective, but just like, why are we doing this, right? Like, if you're pressuring with Domas, I get it. When Miles is out there, it's made sense. But when you're pressuring with Domas and he's the only big in the game, that's when it gets a little bit confusing, because then Doug McDermott's the low man, or, you know, Jeremy Lamb's having to rotate over. And if he makes the right rotation, which doesn't always happen, like even then, like he's not a deterrent at the rim. That's where it's been confusing. And it's felt very much so like working smarter, not harder in some ways. Like, they're very much so like, I mean, you can just look at in terms of sheer minutes, like how much they're playing. Like, they want to go balls to the wall, full energy, get all the stops, get all of the turnovers. But it's just like, it feels like if you dial it back 5 to 10%, that would do so much just in, like, if you could just employ Miles in a drop scheme for a little bit. Because even when they do drop him, it's mostly in like center field. He's not really going into a full drop. And granted, he's fantastic playing center field. He's one of the best in my, like, just watching around the league. I feel like he's one of the best bigs at pick and roll defense. Like, he's so good at neutralizing two-on-ones, but you're still putting him in a really tough situation trying to ask him to do that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when I love activity defensively. I love to see it. I love rotations. I love effort. That's fun for me, but it's very difficult to maintain. Because again, it's an automatic. If it's an automatic, then the offense is going to exploit it, because they've seen it over and over again. And you're depending on effort every single night, which makes it really tough in this league, where more teams are able to punish you when they skip the ball, when they are able to hit the roller, kick it back out. Now they either hit a shot or drive. Now you got to make another rotation. So it's just kind of going to be interesting to see, can they balance, you know, the ball pressure, the activity, the denials, because it looks really good sometimes. You know, they'll have really good possessions where they're closing out, getting into bodies, denying, forcing havoc. And then, you know, there's stretches where none of that's occurring, and now they're getting beat and gashed. So it's kind of like, okay, can we kind of maybe mix our pitches up, you know, like a pitcher? You know, can we have a fastball, curveball? Can we find our base? You know, it's just the base maybe hasn't been as consistent as the Pacers may have wanted it to be so far.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually a really great point. Like, I was talking in one of my group chats the other day, actually one that your co-host Nikias Duncan's on.
Boom.
Yeah, dude. Of course there's a boom, man.
Is this the one where it said Colin Sexton's better than Jamal?
That was the one I brought that into the group chat. I saw somebody post something on it. I was like, I had to bring it up. I was like, hey, this is like, let's talk about it. I don't have a stake in that claim, to be completely honest. I may be from Cleveland. That doesn't mean I'm voting for Colin, but
that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. But it also, to everyone listening, of course, go listen to the Dunker Spot. It's like my favorite podcast right now. I wish it was more than once a week. But yeah, so gosh, where was I even going with that? Oh yeah. Yeah. So we were talking yesterday. Is it better to have like one straight, like being really good at one base defense, or being able to throw out multiple? And I think that brings up like a really great question. Cause like you're mentioning, and I mean, the Pacers base defense hasn't been horrible, but instead of what they had last year, and they could rely on, and I think you look at part of Nate McMillan's entire system was, they had something that they were so consistently good at that's why they were able to be so, I mean, it's reductive to put it this way, but they were able to be so successful during the regular season because they had this thing that they were consistently relying on. They were excellent at it and they executed really well. I mean, as Nate would always say in games, if they didn't play well, we didn't execute. I mean, that was always his go-to, and he was right. But that's what's been different this year, because you see in like some games they'll run, you know, four or five different schemes, but at some point it feels like there needs to be an ability to kind of rely on the base, and it just hasn't felt like it's there yet.
Yeah. I mean, and just to address the question you had asked, I would vote it's more important these days to be able to do multiple things defensively rather than just having a great, great base. Now, obviously, best of both worlds, you want to have a great base no matter what. But if you can do multiple things, you can adjust to different opponents, you can handle different things. We've seen a team like Milwaukee have a tremendous base, And then once that base gets hit, they didn't have anything else to go to. And now they're trying to figure out what to go to now. You know, hey, can we switch? Can we put Brook Lopez here? You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where versatility is king defensively these days. And I think the more you can mix things up, like I think mixed coverages are the toughest thing for guards to handle these days, only because you're not going to give them the same rhythm. You know, if you're able to trap, then you're able to drop, and then you're able to mix that up. And now they don't have the automatic reads. Like I remember I was watching Pacers play the Hawks. I think it was a home game for Indiana. Mm-hmm. And they didn't let Malcolm Brogdon get in a rhythm. They would slide under, and then they would next play, they would go over. So it would be like he's looking for the pull-up. It's not there because they went under. Now he's looking for the pull-up the next time down. They're over. And so it's not – he wasn't able to catch a rhythm. So, like, that kind of speaks to how multiple defenses kind of affect players.
Okay, yeah, that totally makes sense. I appreciate that analogy. That makes a lot of sense when you put it like that. So in looking at some individual players as well, one thing I do have to bring up, because you mentioned closeouts earlier. How do you feel about Jeremy Lamb's closeout defense? I always have to ask people about this because this is it's a tricky question.
I like the activity sometimes, but I don't the footwork. You just gotta keep the ball in front.
I always try and be nice about it. I'm like, Jeremy's a great dude, like probably the funniest player on the team. Love what he does on offense, but gosh, I have no idea where his feet are going sometimes on defense. Like I always explain it to people because people think, I mean, I do think he might have the biggest wingspan of anybody 6'5" that I've ever seen, but like he's so rough at the point of attack because he's guessing all the time. Like I remember you helped me out with a piece I wrote on TJ Warren. Like he does not dictate where anybody's going ever. He's like always like, okay, where are you going? I'll follow you. And I mean, it's like watching like he just like zigzags like when he's on a closeout. It's like sometimes it's nutty. But to conversely, looking at Miles Turner, I think his case has slipped a little bit just because of team defense. Like you're never going to be defensive player of the year if your team's 14th in defense. It just doesn't happen. But his all around defensive impact has been insanely good this year. I'd love, like, just based on what you've seen from him this year, what do you think has been different compared to last year? Because I have my own thoughts on what's been a little bit different, but what do you think's changed up most for him since last year?
For me, it's just been the activity and the awareness. You know, I feel like he's able to do more this year. It's not just protecting the paint and blocking shots. He's able to guard on the perimeter a little bit more. He's able to come over and help transition defense. So I just feel like he's doing more than he had done before when it was just, hey, this is my job. I'm going to protect this and that's going to be fine. Like he's just more of an active participant in the defense. And you can put him in more places and feel confident that he's going to get the result that you need. So I've just been impressed by that aspect of it as far as, you know, it's not just the being able to contain and block. Hey, he's on the weak side, pulls over and helps, gets back out to his man, doesn't give up a shot or, you know, those little things are where I've said, you know what, Miles Turner taking a step in that direction.
Yeah, definitely. Like you're mentioning with activity, one of my favorite things that I've liked I think what I've picked up on in basketball, because I'm still like pretty new to like learning everything. But like in watching defense, like you're mentioning with activity, I think some people would think, okay, that's deflections, which that's where when I started noticing activity is deflections. But then you also notice, okay, well, like, does he have his arms down at his size or his arms up? Like Miles always has his arms up. And more importantly too, I think what he's really improved on, like he did it a little bit last year, but this year it's all the time. And part of the reason he's been so good in playing center field, is he's like great at like jabbing his arms out and just forcing either somebody to pick up their dribble, to not make a pass, to think twice on taking a floater. Like it makes such a big difference. Like Nikola Jokic is obviously a completely different player, but he's somebody like his hand activity is fantastic. Like that's one of the reasons he's able to play at the level of ball screens and things like that. And yeah, that activity has been absolutely tremendous. I'll ask another one too. What do you think about Domantas Sabonis' defense this year? Collective sigh from all Pacers fandom. Yeah.
It depends on how you view it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been great in the traditional sense, but for what he's been asked to do, he's mostly done his job. I mean, could he do a better job of containing penetration when he's at the level or trapping? Yes. Could he do a better job in rotation? Yes. But for what he has to do weak side, I think he's done okay. And I think he can be a guy who I like to call a do your job defender.
Yeah.
Hey, you're going to do this when you're in this action and we're going to figure it out. I think he can get there. But it's been a mixed bag for me, I'm going to be honest.
No, trust me.
I love Sabonis, but it's just it's been a mixed bag.
Well, yeah, that exactly. Like, I think that's what's so hard with gauging this year compared to last year, because I think a lot of people have, especially with fans, they've really grilled his defense this year. And it's like you're mentioning, like, he's just, the context is so important, because I don't really think he's been, in terms of like effort or what he's doing IQ wise, has been different from last year. But what he's being asked to do is like, it's a 180, you know, it's completely different. Instead of rotating off the weak side, I mean, he's at the point of attack, like almost every play. It's a complete shift in what you're doing. And granted, I think he's held up a little bit better than I thought he would this year in terms of doing that. But still, like you're mentioning, like, he's just not, I mean, that's asking a lot for somebody. And regardless, it always comes down to, can you actually play two bigs, or at least these two bigs together, which will always be the outstanding question for however long they're together. But yeah, I would agree with that. So if,
honestly, this is the first year that I've gotten away from that question.
Really? What do you mean?
I've been hard on the Sabonis Turner thing. I always felt like their minutes were bad together.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I led the train. I felt bad about it, but I did. But this year, I've kind of been like, you know what? They kind of figured it out.
It's been better. Yeah, I guess.
Not so bad.
Well, I guess, yeah. Well, see, my thing is too, it's hard because, like, I look at a lot, like, with when they played Boston last year, they just got absolutely slaughtered in the Sabonis Turner minutes, because they could have four wings out there with a pretty mobile center. And I'm still interested to see how they can function defensively against more teams like that. Because when, like we've talked about, like, once they're able to get into that second rotation, it's like, that's where you have a problem, because then one of the bigs is trying to close out on the corner. And it's not often that the shot is the problem. It's that they're driving to the rim off of that, because you can blow by Domas when he's closing out to the corner. But yeah, I mean, we'll see on that. So you overall, though, you feel a lot better about Turner Sabonis this year then?
I feel better about it this year. It doesn't feel like there's so much in each other's way.
Yeah, you know,
there's been enough nights where they're both doing well, and that may have to do with Miles being better on the perimeter, not just shooting, but hey, the driving.
Yeah,
driving, yeah. And finish.
He can do things with the ball in his hands now. It's a vast improvement.
It's different, but like it always felt like they were in each other's way. Like, mm-hmm. It felt like last year, even when the Pacers would get to movement, which wasn't always the time, but it felt like it would end with Miles being open on the perimeter, and it'd be like, defense wins. Not because Miles can't make the play, but the defense is like, that's what we wanted. Of all that stuff you guys were doing, we'll take that. But it kind of feels like there's more of a flow between this year. So it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I have one last question if you got time still, man.
Yeah.
What did you think? Did you by chance catch Pacers Bucks? It was not a game that you probably wanted to watch after about the second quarter. But they ended up not playing Miles Turner on Giannis at all. And they initially actually started with Malcolm on him and played him there for most of the game before they put in the bench. I think that's the one matchup I've really looked at, other than when like we mentioned with Boston. That's the one matchup I've looked at and just said, I have no idea how they try and defend that. And again, it's freaking Giannis and Antetokounmpo. I have no idea how anybody defends that. And that's how we're getting with Zion now too. But what are your thoughts on them not using Miles on him at all?
I'm assuming an attempt to either protect him or use him as a help defender. It would be my guess, and hope that you can get enough activity from Brogdon to bother him. And if he gets beat, you still have Miles able to help, as opposed to, you know, keeping Miles back, or, you know, him driving right at Miles or something like that. So that'd be my guess as to why they may have done that. Should they have done that the whole game? I don't know.
Yeah, that's yep.
You probably one of those things you mix and match, but if you feel like, hey, we're going to try and funnel him, he's going to get in the paint either way, so we might as well have him meet Miles instead of beat Miles, or, you know what I mean, meet him slide back, I can kind of get it. But I probably wouldn't go that route.
That was okay. That was the closest you've come to a pun all pod, man. I've been waiting the entire time, man. But to everyone listening, also the pun father over on Dunker Spot.
Thank you for putting respect on my name.
I have to, man.
Refuses to.
Oh, dude, he sounds like every time that you make one, he sounds like my mom when I cuss at home.
The deep sigh. Like, now, yeah, here's exactly. The thing. The more sighs he gives, the worse these are going to get.
Exactly, right? And if you acknowledge, then I'm just going to keep doing it. Like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to feed into the game. So
it's going to get really bad. And, like, I've had some really bad ones that I haven't said.
They're progressing, man. You should just keep a notebook of them.
Like, oh, that's volume. 3 or 4 times a day.
Exactly. Three or four times that's how I feel about jokes, man. I'm like, I'm just – screw it. I'll just be Nick Young. I don't care. They'll go in eventually, right? So
yeah, throw it up.
Exactly. Well, Steve, I really appreciate your time, man. Where can people find you as or anything you want to plug before you get out of here?
You should find me on Twitter at SteveJones20. I'm clipping away, flooding your timelines with knowledge and love. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, to everyone listening, of course, go follow Steve and everything he does. He's great. I appreciate you taking the time, man. Have a good rest of your day. And to everyone listening, go Pacers.
No, thank you. And listen to the Dunker Spot, man.
Yes, definitely. Sorry, I forgot to get that plug in there too.